the world's problems. Someone said I was being facetious. Well, I was. No, we were not going to solve the world's problems in one evening, in spite of there being a Presbyterian minister leading the discussion and two Unitarians contributing. It was not that simple. But I was reminded of the saying, I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something I can do. And since we are all very independent beings, in some way our actions, because we are independent, but also because we are interdependent, and that's the interesting difference, isn't it? So what we do affects the larger world. Often this is the only way we can influence the world. These actions produce their little ripples, and even if these ripples don't go very far, even if they only touch the person next to us, they change one small part of the world. And who knows how far they will go? Who knows what experience we have given to one other person, but perhaps then another and another and another? I want to share two stories with you, one mine and the other from a friend, with her permission. Although they are quite different, they are, in one important way, similar. The first is mine. I'm on my way to introduce a topic and moderate a discussion at a philosopher's cafe. The venue is the Dogwood Pavilion, and it is, you may know it, a senior center in the middle of Coquitlam. It's only the second time I would be there, but I already feel the group and I were meant for each other. The only problem is that the bus service is not good. I am resigned to a lengthy route. I must get one bus to get to Coquitlam Station in time to get a second bus, which only goes every half hour, and will get me to the center. But this day, the first bus does not arrive. I don't know what happened, but it did not come. The second bus, then, I am going to miss. I must let the center know that I will be late, or the group will think I have forgotten them, abandoned them, after only one session, and they will go home. I do not have the phone number of the Dogwood Pavilion. Also, I have a new cell phone, and I do not know how to find the number. I mean, you know, duh, but Chrome didn't mean anything to me at all at that point. I'm panicking, almost in tears. I say to the two people near me at the bus stop, "Can you help me? I need a number, but I have a new phone and I don't know how to use it." They look at me rather blankly. Immediately, though, a man on the other side of the divider says, "Can I help?" Quickly, he finds the number and he speaks it. As he does, I phone and I arrive 15 minutes late, but the group is patiently waiting. The second event was told to me by a friend. I will call her Alice. She is not young, but despite her almost 70 years, is not answering too old. She was walking a little behind her son when the action began. "I was on Denman just before Beach Avenue," she says, and her expression becomes pensive as she relives the experience. I'm on the south side, looking across at the beginning of Stanley Park, where Beach and Denman make an acute angle. A bike is zipping along Denman so fast it is banking toward the curve of the sidewalk. As the bike nears a crosswalk, I see a man starting across the crosswalk, just starting. The bike does not slow down, but whips in front of him, touching his clothes. He is not hurt, but he is insulted. He is angry, very angry. Even from where I am, she says, I can tell, I can see his anger. Then, she continues, the bike slows down enough to make the sharp right turn onto Beach. The crosswalk man turns, and he strides across the corner. As the bicycle comes near him, he stretches out his hand, a gentle but well-placed shove, and bike and rider flip onto the road. Then he drops his guilty palm, turns, and heads back to the crosswalk. He begins to cross the street. Meanwhile, though, the bicycle guy is up, reacting to danger. After all, he could have been seriously hurt. He abandons his bike on the street, moves quickly across the corner, and enters the crosswalk. The two men arrive in front of me at the same time. I am aware of how close they are. They do not seem to see me. They confront each other. The anger in their voices is electric. One of them was grazed by a speeding bike, and the other was knocked off his bike, off with his bike onto the road. They are now face to face, anger to anger, angry words, and ready fists. With no conscious thought, I step between them. They do not hit me, but then I didn't think they would. I didn't think at all. I face each one and tell what I saw. I tell each man's story exactly as it happened. They listen. Then I turn. Behind me, I hear a few calm words. No fighting. My son is watching. He says, Mom, that could have been dangerous. What if the man had hit me? My son would have come to my rescue. I had not thought of that. I had not thought at all. Alice stops, looks a little bewildered, but proud, and waits for my words. Well, we could debate the wisdom of her action. The interesting thing to me is that Alice acted without being aware of a decision to act. Although she was quite capable of considering her actions, in this case, she acted from impulse. I believe that not only Alice, but also the man acted this way, even the man giving me the number for Dogwood. It doesn't need to be a dramatic action. In each case, there had been a trigger, then very quickly a reaction. And when the trigger is an insult, in this way, some wars begin. An insult, a reaction, an escalation. And all because the original players acted emotionally, possibly seeming to have thought of the consequences, but actually automatically reacting to a situation? Have we any understanding of why this happens? There has to be some reason why we act one way and not another. The fact is, really, we are part of the animal kingdom. It's efficient to act without thought. The way an animal continues to look for food where it has once found it before. The bear that kept tipping over my compost bin every morning at 6:30. That is automatic action. The bear certainly did not consider the fact that it had never again found food, that every day I would need to clean up the mess. Its previous experience determined its action. But what about us? Are we the same? From how emotions are made by Barrett and other sources, I learned human experiences are used to produce automatic reactions to events. These reactions impel us to particular acts. The acts have been timed, and this is really proven. The acts have been timed and happen before we think. We often act one way or another before our first thought, let alone a second or a third. We act somewhat the way the bear does, from past experience rather than a conscious decision. Well, then how are we different? What makes us human? Unlike other animals, we can consciously influence our experiences. I remind you of the plasticity of the brain. You've heard that before, I think. Neurons that fire together, wire together. So the more we reinforce our actions or our thoughts, the stronger the inclination to act in a certain way. Change the input, and this changes the output. We can choose to experience and in that way influence our automatic reactions, our responses. And therein lies our humanity and our responsibility. But how do we choose our experiences? There are various ways. But one important way is attention. Give your attention to something. Attention is like a vacuum cleaner, a combination spotlight and a vacuum cleaner that sucks that idea up into your brain and actually changes your brain a little bit. Yes, what you pay attention to, what you think, feel, and want, and how you react and behave all physically change the connections in your brain. Now, if you can do that, perhaps you can pick a word that you would like to give your attention to. So, I have thought of a few words that you might think of, and that word may be, well, I will suggest something in a minute, so that it could possibly start a ripple somewhat like Amelia's smile did in the story. A word to build your automatic connections. Here are some thoughts. Love. Inspiration. Trust. Kindness. Peace. Forgiveness, caring, truth, wisdom, inspiration, simplicity. You might like to just choose one in your brain right now, one that you think would be important. I decide my word is love. I figure that covers just about everything. As my Sikh taxi driver said when summing up our little conversation about religion, love the world and help those who need it. So I sit and I practice. I sit and I feel love. I feel the energy of it moving in me. It warms me and expands out into the world. Will this attention I give it affect the way I relate to others? Because I feel more loving, will I automatically act in a more loving way? I think so. Of course, the feeling comes and goes. I suppose it's a matter of practice. Practice with my relatives, friends, and acquaintances. And so, when you think of your word, let it take it where it will. This is doubly helpful, since another thing that influences how we react is whether we are feeling secure, balanced, content in our own lives. It's sort of like, you know, if you've got the flu or something, you just can't give the same response that you would like to other people. And one way to feel secure is having a good connection with others, those relatives, friends, and acquaintances that we mentioned. And part of that is being a participant in a meaningful and fulfilling group, a group like Beacon. And if this group is our tribe, how big is it? Is it Beacon? Or could it be larger? Maybe there is one tribe inside another, or sort of a Venn diagram of tribes. If we accept our tribe as the world, how does that influence our action, our attention? Our actions speak louder than words, actions. The theme for February is interdependence. And interdependence produces ripples. Ripples back and forth between people. What will your ripples be? Will they add to conflict or reduce it? We all are part of that interdependent world. We began this service with a Transylvanian house blessing. And now I will introduce a quiet meditation, which Marilka will end with her recorder, with somewhat similar words from a Zen Buddhist writer. Let us meditate on these words. If there is light in the soul, there is beauty in the person. If there is beauty in the person, there will be harmony in the house. If there is harmony in the house, there will be order in the nation. If there is order in the nation, there will be peace in the world.